introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is a special edition of the Pocket Protectors Podcast, the podcast where I get people way smarter than me to talk football stuff. And I'm joined with my good friend and a new friend here to talk stuff about the Vikings, Kirk Cousins, free agency, whatever comes to mind. There's really nothing written down. We're freestyling today. So we're going to go in a different order, actually, because we have special guests. You've read his work on the twitter.com Vikings territory. Nick, my man, Nick Olson, how you doing?
What's going on, Jason? I'm good. How you doing?
Doing all right. Very happy to have you on because you are one of the smarter voices on Twitter. You do a lot of work. You put a lot of work in. And so excited to have you fill in the very big shoes of Luke Braun, who's gone Hollywood on us now and does not have time to come around and slum it doing this podcast. So we're happy to have you on, and it should be good times. And
looking forward to it.
Last but certainly not least, the good doctor, everyone's favorite degenerate, Eric. How's it going, man? How you doing?
I reject that label, even as I carry, you know, a decent amount of Kyler Murray plus 300 number one overall pick tickets. Things are going okay. This is a fun week. This is probably, you know, as off seasons go, probably the second most exciting week to draft weekend. So really excited to see what the Vikings try to do here with their cap space and some of the needs they have.
All right. Well, we're just going to jump right to it because, you know, Nick, I feel like of late you have become the great defender of Kirk Cousins, or so it seems on Twitter.com. Feels like maybe every week, every other week or so, you do a deep dive looking at stats or maybe rewatching film, posting clips. And as you yourself have kind of pointed out, it's a strange position for you to be in based on kind of where you were before the Vikings signed Kirk Cousins in the first place, because you were kind of out front saying, probably not going to be the great idea for them to bring in Kirk Cousins. So help me out. Help me understand, I guess, from where you were initially, this is probably not the greatest move, to where you are now, where it seems like you are generally kind of out front leading the charge, I guess, on the statistical side of things, trying to say maybe Kirk Cousins isn't as bad as we're all saying that he is.
Yeah, maybe it's the attorney in me being a contrarian, but last offseason, Cousins, I did not want to sign him to a big deal. I was not impressed at all by his 2017 tape. Went back and rewatched everything, wrote an article, kind of let folks judge for themselves in that article, but you could read between the lines and see I was not a big fan of Cousins. And I wouldn't say my opinion on him from a football perspective has changed that much. But I do think, you know, the pendulum swung, whereas last year people looked at Cousins' box score stats and they thought, oh, wow, you know, 4,000 yards, however many touchdowns, not very many interceptions, really productive in Washington, just didn't have a team around him. Of course, he did have a team around him. He had a stacked team around him and great offensive minds around him. But came to Minnesota and was a disappointment. At least by the win-loss columns, which is about as good a way to judge a quarterback as by his how many yards he throws, I suppose. But I think people probably overreacted a bit much. I mean, he's still probably like a top 15-ish, top 20-ish. I mean, it depends. There's a lot of good young quarterbacks, and you know, wherever you want to rank, like Sam Darnold or something, Cousins is probably in that range. But I don't know. He's a fine quarterback. Obviously, you probably want to have a cheap rookie or an elite top five quarterback on a franchise deal, but yeah, you could do worse than Kirk Cousins. So that's kind of where I'm settled in at.
Okay, so yeah, you could do worse. That feels like
Yeah, glowing endorsement of Kirk Cousins right there. Is you could do worse.
It feels pretty fair though. So Eric,
you could have Joe Flacco. It could be worse.
Oh. So Eric, obviously you guys have put a lot of work in. The QB annual did come out, and there's a ton of great statistical analysis in there about Kirk Cousins and all the other quarterbacks. But I guess if you could help maybe give us a summary of where Kirk Cousins is, you know, as of last season, and if that's changed kind of your opinion on him for the good, for the bad, did he have a better season, worse season? Like, how does this Kirk Cousins season kind of, you know, rank or sit amongst all of the seasons that he's had as an NFL quarterback?
Well, it's interesting because I don't disagree with anything Nick said. My thing is, so I obviously didn't like sweat through all of Cousins' 2017 Washington games the way that I did the Minnesota games this year. But, and I do agree to a degree that quarterback wins are a stat like yards, like touchdowns, like give me another, you know, like fantasy statistic where there's some signal there, but it's not the way that I would judge a quarterback if I had something better, and we obviously do. My issue with Cousins was always that when structure broke down around him, he went from being what I would consider a legitimate top 10 quarterback in the NFL to a quarterback that's somewhere in that 15 to 19 range. And with the way that the Vikings sort of approached last offseason, I was just super concerned with this idea that, you know, we have the best defense in the NFL. We have a really good coach. You know, we have this great up and coming offensive mind, and all we need to do is plug and play Cousins. And even if he's like even a little bit worse than Keenum, here we go, right? And of course, like that's so full of like terrible, like, you know, faux pas. A, defenses, as we see, even though the Vikings defense is still fundamentally good, it regressed. The great young offensive mind, we found out that the great offensive minds in Philadelphia were Reich and Peterson and not DeFilippo. And then, like, you know, Zimmer, I think, is as a coach, a very good defensive play caller. I think a top five guy there. But as a head coach, I think he's very much a front runner. We see in 15, we see in 17, when the team's going well, things snowball correctly for him. And like in 16 and 18, when things go poorly, they sort of snowball in the wrong direction for him. So I think like a lot of people said, okay, these things are about the Vikings are fixed. And so if you insert Cousins in there, it's just going to be, you know, we're just going to be a Super Bowl contender again. And what we saw was all those things broke down to some degree. And even though Cousins was extremely talented, like some of the throws he makes are extremely beautiful. Like when he sets his mind to it, he's very accurate. He's very functional, but he's not the type of quarterback that can withstand perturbations to his system. And then as such, I don't think he's worth the money that they're paying him. So like for me, it's like they're poor efficient from an efficiency standpoint, they're poor. And then like when that all broke down, he was like one of the bottom three quarterbacks in the league in terms of generating positive graded throws, which is just not a good thing.
Yeah, one of the weird things that really happened with Cousins is in 2017 he was, and Eric, probably your big time throw percentage and negatively graded throws percentage might back this up. I don't have that offhand, but I feel like he was a lot more aggressive in Washington and terrible under pressure. And something, and that was the narrative coming in. And then this 2018 was kind of the opposite of that, yes, where he actually played pretty well under pressure, surprisingly well. Well enough that you might expect him to regress next year. But his play from a clean pocket was. And this is, I think, the point with Cousins that he doesn't get nearly enough criticism about, is that he was just very conservative, very risk averse, checking it down. And that led to a lot of drive stalling. So that was not the Cousins we saw in Washington. And I don't know if that's just from going to Gruden to DeFilippo or DeFilippo overcompensating for the offensive line. I don't really have an explanation for that. But I think if we want to criticize Cousins' 2018 play, it should start with how conservative he was and how he just was not making plays.
Well, I think that has to do with his mentality, right? So, like, you're right. In Washington, he did take more shots downfield. His profile from being, you know, playing under pressure versus playing from a clean pocket did flip, which is weird because we know that one is a stable metric, one is generally not. The latter, you know, under pressure is generally a function of your supporting cast, and the Vikings, you know, at least on the outside, have a pretty good supporting cast. So you should expect that to regress a little bit. You know, it was very much like Sam Bradford in 16. Weirdly, he was under a lot of pressure, but his pass rating when under pressure was like 88, which is like second best in the league. So those are like things that like I think we overlook when we like poo-poo the Vikings, you know, supporting cast as poor as it is in some places. But, you know, when you look at like when you look at what, you know, in the second half of the season when things got, you know, went poorly, he did not double down. He did not, you know, as you said, he got more conservative. He was one of, I think he was the only quarterback in the NFL who had fewer than 10% of his throws negatively graded, but also fewer than 20% of his throws positively graded. So I think in terms of negatively graded throws, only, I believe, Drew Brees and Pat Mahomes had fewer as a percentage of their passes, which is good. But, you know, from the perspective of like throwing positively graded throws, you look at like the New England game, you look at the Chicago game, like at some level, you know, the reason that Pat Mahomes and those guys are brilliant is because they take a lot of shots and they know that that ratio is going to be like 2-1, 3-1. And it seems like Cousins was just so scared that it was going to be 1-1. And he stopped doing those things. So that's kind of like, that has always been my hesitation. And then of course, like, it's just like some of the things that you hear, that you read about and you see in terms of how he interacts with his teammates, in contrast to how we saw them interact with Bridgewater and Keenum and those types of things, in terms of trying to predict the future for the Vikings, that to me, aside from his statistical profile, is what, and it's weirdly not analytical at all, has me the most afraid about the Vikings franchise over the next few years in terms of having him as the person that's leading the offense.
So am I hearing you both say that we actually want Kirk to be more of a gunslinger for us to be a more successful offense? Is that like,
yes,
maybe definitely. Some more turnovers potentially, but more big plays, and just kind of, you know, honestly, ride that line?
The turnovers thing, I think, Eric, you might have the exact number, but his turnover-worthy play percentage was among the best.
Extremely low.
And that includes fumbles, too. People think he has a fumble problem, but he had an above-average fumble grade. But really, the thing is he had 5 strip sacks, 10 total fumbles, 3 were bad snaps, not really his fault. 2 were throws behind the line of scrimmage. 1 was a dumb thing where he was trying to throw it away, and it was actually a throw behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah. 1 was a toss to Dalvin Cook that was dropped, that Cook dropped, and that's a fumble that gets charted to Cousins.
Yeah.
5 were strip sacks, and you think, okay, 5 strip sacks, it sounds like a lot, but that's actually, I think, below average, especially considering how often Cousins was dropping back. And then it felt like a ton because all 5 were recovered by the defense. Those are usually 50-50 balls historically.
Yeah.
And 2 were returned for touchdowns. So those are just backbreakers. And, you know, I think 7% historically of strip sacks are returned for a touchdown. So they have 40%. That's obviously that hurts a lot more than you think.
And it's memorable to us.
And he had 10 interceptions. And I don't think he might not have had a dropped interception all year. So he kind of had bad luck that made him feel like he was turning the ball over a lot, or maybe they happened at crucial moments, like the Saints pick 6 kind of turned the tide of that game. Coincidentally, that I don't think is a play you would punish Cousins for because Diggs stopped mid-route.
He didn't get a negative grade on that play.
Yeah. So he was pretty conservative, and he took care of the ball pretty well, but you would definitely want him to be more aggressive. Especially, well, and this is an interesting contrast with Case Keenum in 2017, is it makes sense. You know, you kind of want to throw to the open receiver and not take your chance on 50-50 balls, but that's not really the case when you have Stephon Diggs, who's the number one contested catch receiver over the past couple of years, and Adam Thielen, who I think is top 10. So you would want him to definitely be more aggressive.
Well, yeah, because like one of the things, so as you said, Cousins was 4th best in terms of limiting turnover-worthy throws. He was 20th best in terms of big time throws. As I said before, he was 3rd best in limiting negatively graded throws, but 31st in positively graded throws. So again, we remember some of his bad plays so much because they end up being catastrophic, but ultimately in terms of producing them, he's not so bad. The issue again is that like, some of the plays he makes are so sort of like Kirkian and boneheaded that like he ends up, you know, he ends up having a difficult time, like, just letting it rip, right? So, like, the stat that I brought out a couple days ago was on his 47 targets to Laquon Treadwell, they averaged 2.34 yard time to throw. And so he's like making the decision pre-snap to throw to Treadwell. And it's just like, I don't know. I just don't necessarily know if that would be something necessarily that like a different quarterback would do, or, you know, have maybe a little bit more discernment there. But I think one of the things that I think is maddening about the way that Kirk played last season is it sort of takes you back to some of the other Vikings teams. So like, I remember like the first Childress year where they had Brad Johnson, and Brad was extremely limited and their offense was extremely boring, and they were not efficient at all. Like, you know, the Vikings were 24th, I believe, this year in EPA per pass play. So they weren't efficient play for play. And then, you know, the fact that they didn't, you know, Brad didn't turn the ball over a lot, and neither did Kirk. But then like when they did, it was so like asymmetrical, right? So like when Pat Mahomes turns the ball over, it's, you know, in addition to throwing three touchdowns in the game and being the most efficient offense in the league. So it's like, okay, you take some of the good with the bad. When you don't add any of the good in, or you're not efficient on a play for play down, and if you're in the case of the Vikings, can't run the ball either, like those turnovers, however infrequent, are backbreakers to your offense because you're just hanging by a thread to begin with.
How much of this do we think is Mike Zimmer? Because, I mean, a lot of the things you guys are saying that we want from Kirk Cousins is kind of what we were getting from, say, a Case Keenum that Zimmer didn't really seem to be on board with, and that many of us were at the time like, oh, he can't keep kind of riding this edge. It's going to kind of go the other way, and maybe next season is going to be a lot worse. I guess, how does this factor into, I guess, the way you analyze or think about Kirk Cousins' performance, just given the way that, you know, Zimmer has kind of said he wants to win games, and, you know, Kirk kind of assimilating into that system?
Well, I think that's why people found Keenum so endearing, right? Because, you know, the coach would go after him in the press, and would, you know, blast him at times for putting the team on the edge and everything like that. And he sort of stayed within himself, and he continued to play the only way he knew how to play, if you will. And ultimately, like, that hurt them. But I would say if you would have had Keenum sort of buttoned up, you probably would have gotten what he was with the Rams in 2016. So, you know, far worse. As Nick said, throwing the ball to contested receivers, you know, again, taking the good with the bad, it does seem like Kirk, you know, sort of took some of what Zimmer, you know, intimated to the media to heart. And it ultimately was to his detriment, I think, in terms of, like, you know, lacking, you know, explosiveness and efficiency in the offensive, you know, moving the football.
Yeah. Although Zimmer did say, you know, I remember him specifically saying, like, Keenum's got big balls, and I love that about him, which is like one of those Zimmer quotes. So
yeah,
it would be to Cousins' benefit, I think. And I think Zimmer would be on board. I think he knew that the offense was lacking explosiveness. So
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know how to fix the Vikings, but I think that explosiveness, that aggressiveness in the pass game and in the run game, that's the number one thing, I think, on the list.
All right, so Nick, have you made it all the way through? I know that you were kind of tweeting out some of your thoughts, and we're going to put them together in a fully fleshed out article. As you kind of look at your last season for Cousins, outside of maybe taking some more chances, were there any other big things that you were hoping to see him do a little bit different or do better to kind of help the Vikings offense as we get into 2019?
Aggressiveness is the number one thing. His pocket presence is not great. Could be better. You could improve there. It's hard to knock him for accuracy. He ended up actually charting as one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league. And part of that is, you know, completion percentage, and Next Gen Stats has a stat, completion percentage above expectation, which factors in average depth of target, receiver separation, distance from the sideline, those kinds of factors. He ranked second in that to Drew Brees. He ranked third if you include Nick Foles. I exclude him usually because it just snap counts. And he ranked really highly in Pro Football Focus's charting as well. So hard to knock him for accuracy. His arm strength, I mean, he's not, you know, Pat Mahomes. He's not Aaron Rodgers, but his arm strength is fine. I guess one thing that he's always struggled with is playing outside of a structure. He's kind of, if he gets a good pre-snap read, he knows what to do with the ball. He knows where to go. If he gets confused by a look, I think you saw that a lot in the Patriots game where they were throwing very strange amoeba fronts at him and it kind of threw him off. He tends to struggle a little bit more. So maybe that's another area of improvement, but I think if Stefanski improves, you know, the best case scenario is Stefanski builds up a scheme that looks kind of like what Pat Shurmur was. And remember, Pat Shurmur wanted Stefanski to be his offensive coordinator. So maybe that's some reason for hope there. Maybe that schemes Cousins into more aggressiveness like he was in Washington, because we've seen Cousins be aggressive before. So I think if you're trying to build the best case scenario, that's maybe where it starts.
How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a, you know, those are great ideas. I think, you know, what's nice about where the Vikings are sitting right now currently is that at 18, they're likely, you know, as much as I would love them to, you know, take a valuable position like corner or safety or even like an off the ball linebacker who can cover and stuff, like they're probably going to draft an offensive lineman at 18. That's pretty good. And so that, you know, really should help. And because I do think, like, you know, as much as a quarterback controls their own pressure rate to some degree, like it would be helpful if he, you know, I think there could be situations where a guy like Kirk, in terms of like just confidence on a play for play basis, you know, just likes that assurance in front of him. So I think they'll get an opportunity there to shore up the offensive line to a degree. But then, you know, I think that they really do have to address the third receiver. I think that they, you know, with the Rudolph news today, that's a little disappointing, but I think that they need to go out and get themselves a field stretching tight end. I don't know if like this is the year to really go after Jared Cook and, you know, make a case that it's worth it to overpay a guy like that. But, you know, Kirk was extremely effective in Washington with two field stretching tight ends. We saw that in the game in 2016. And three receivers. And the Vikings currently have two really good outside receivers, a tight end who's like sort of okay, and a running game that's, you know, to Nick's point, I think like Shurmur did a really good job of incorporating the backs as really efficient, effective receivers in 2017. I think like that's where Dalvin Cook's going to make his most money in Minnesota. So I think it's all of the above there. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be a suboptimal way that the Vikings can improve their offense in 2019.
Well, you just brought it up, so I have to ask there. 18, from your perspective, what is, like, let's say, you know, I'll ask the same question I asked the guys on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. If, you know, Dillard, Noah Fant, and Bradbury are all sitting there at 18, what's the right move, Nick? Which way are you going to kind of maximize what you're getting out of this offense and this team?
I think, you know, the Vikings are in a weird position where they have the tackles locked down. That's usually your premium position. And I think this is, I know we said last year, but I think this is an even deeper offensive line class. There were like 10 more offensive linemen invited to the combine. I'm seeing like 25 guys with day one or day two grades or something. So I do think, you know, Vikings player is going to freak out if we take a skill player at 18, but I do think skill player would be the right way to go there. And I would take Fant just because, what Eric was saying, I think in Washington, when we saw him have two tight ends, especially ones that could stretch the field, there was the offense was benefited a ton from it. And I think someone like Fant could do that for the team. So that's what I would do. And I do think you could get, you know, maybe not somebody as good as Bradbury in the second round, but maybe Risner's there, or maybe one of the other, you know, five other starting caliber interior offensive linemen will be there. So,
yeah, Dalton Risner, from everything. So we built this projection system for offensive line to use sort of in our consulting role. And essentially, in terms of what the Vikings want to do, Dalton Risner is their best choice. And not only, I think, just fundamentally, but also in terms of like where he succeeded in college, I think, you know, he'd be a very good pick for the Vikings. If they could trade back and somehow get him in the mid 20s, I think that would be even more, you know, I think that would be even more of a steal for them. Fant's intriguing for sure. And I think if they don't open up enough cap space, and if they strike out in free agency on somebody like Cook, he could be a guy that they think about as well. The tough part with tight ends is, as you know, as we've seen before, is that tight ends in the draft, I mean, the Eric, it's so weird, but like even a guy like Vernon Davis, but we saw Eric Ebron this year, a lot of those guys like take forever to sort of pan out. And that would be my only hesitation with Fant, is just, you know, the tight ends in the top of the draft, you know, their hit rates are, pretty low usually. So I would say just kind of go all in on Jared Cook, to be honest.
I kind of struggle with taking, it's funny because when it comes to taking like defensive prospects, I'm totally okay taking athletes, especially on the defensive line, because Andre Patterson just has this ridiculous hit rate with pure athletes with no, with, you know, not just Danielle Hunter, but Everson Griffin was the same way. Stephen Weatherly was just kind of a freak athlete in the seventh round. A lot of those guys, and Patterson has coached them all. But when it comes to tight ends, it's a little dicier. So, and then, you know, we have a new tight ends coach, so I don't know if you'd feel confident taking someone. I mean, I'd prefer someone like Hawkinson, but yeah, you gave me three options, so I went with the one that was there.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And I guess the next question I had for both of you guys here, we're going into free agency. Like, legal tampering is right around the corner. Rumors are starting to fly already, as Eric, you know, alluded to. Kyle Rudolph's agent, you know, came out basically saying that there will be no restructure. Kyle will be with the team over the long term. But as you guys are thinking about, you know, some of the bigger free agent decisions the team needs to make over the next couple of days here, days and weeks, you know, Eric, if you're looking to, I guess, set the team up for the maximum amount of success with the decisions they have to make, kind of which way are you going? Which players are you really trying hard to keep? And which ones are you okay letting walk out the door?
Yeah, I think the toughest one but the most, I think the most straightforward one is obviously letting Anthony Barr go. I grew up a Vikes fan. I still root for the team. But I as a fan of the league, I sort of want to see Barr play for like a, you know, Detroit Lions, New England Patriots, sort of in that Dante Hightower role, that Kyle Van Noy role where he, like, I just think he would be such a defensive weapon in that spot that it would do the league a disservice to continue to play him as an off the ball linebacker in Zimmer's scheme, no matter, you know. So I think he's probably gone. I think if I'm looking for somebody for the Vikings to retain, I think that Sheldon Richardson is the player, for them to retain. He was 14th this past season in pressures from the interior of the defensive line. He didn't have the great sack totals, but he certainly was somebody who was disruptive. I think you probably have to let Everson Griffin go. And honestly, I know this is going to make people mad. And I think, you know, I'm all for corners, but I've been really like the way that the Vikings have aggressively addressed the position, not only in the first round, but also with Alexander in the second round and then Holton Hill later on. I think you try to see what you can get in a trade for Rhodes or Waynes, because, you know, that's really going to free up cap space for them and they don't have a ton of flexibility. So those are players I'd probably think about in terms of subtractions. Rudolph, obviously, but it doesn't sound like that's feasible. And then when I'm in free agency, I think I'm looking for, you know, it sounds strange, but I think if you're looking for offensive weapons and you don't want to pay for the Golden Tates of the world, I think somebody like Adam Humphries, I think somebody like Cole Beasley would be really, affordable for them. And very effective in that sort of slot role. Free agents on the offensive line are going to be tough to come by, but so I would say, you know, weapons and free agency and offensive line in the draft kind of thing.
Okay. Cole Beasley, Adam Humphries, Eric going with the all grit team. I like it. I like it.
I got to find some non-monochromatic comp. But Golden Tate's probably going to be expensive, and he's certainly better than those two players. But they're those two. So, like, if you think about in the history of the Vikings, you know, one of the things that Brad Childers was actually really good at was he looked like, I remember in 2007, I wanted them to sign Daniel Graham, and instead he signed Vasante Shenko, who was like younger, more athletic, and like unknown and cheaper, you know. In 2006, I wanted them to sign Edgerrin James, and they signed Chester Taylor, which is like the exact same thing. In 2007, they also signed Bobby Wade when there were other – and then, of course, like, he went out and got Barry and Madu Williams and stuff. Like, he got, like, the sort of upper end of the spectrum sometimes, but there were other times when they sort of, like, went down the, you know, down the list. Now, football is different now because we have PFF. We have everybody, you know, we have Twitter and all that. So everybody, like – nobody would know who Adam Humphries was like 5 years ago, right? But since we all, like, you know, are so obsessed with the game now, we know every, like, random player there is. But, like, I think it would be, and Bobby Wade was super effective for the Vikings, and so was Shanko. So, like, I kind of think of, like, those types of signings right now would do the Vikings a world of good.
Are there any of those types of signings that that you could see from maybe, like, a veteran offensive lineman that would be a fit?
I mean, that's, yeah, I'd have to look. I saw the Osemele thing, came up today. That would have been one. So one of the ones that I proposed to one of our guys was writing a column, and then somebody like Mitch Morse, who's the center right now, who was the center for Kansas City, who is much injured but effective when he played. I think Kansas City is probably going to let him go because they're staring down the barrel at Tyreek Hill and Chris Jones and possibly Dee Ford. Somebody like that, I think, like, I know, like, everybody really likes Alfine and, like, what he's done, you know, in his first couple years, but I'm a little bit more mixed, I think, on what I believe he could do for them. So somebody like that, I think, is going to be, like, sort of underpaid, in my opinion. I don't know. That was the one name that came to my mind.
Oh, I might add the two Packers guards that Josh Sitton looks like he's going to be cut from Miami. He used to be the gold standard for pass protection as a guard. Yeah. And who's the other one? The other Packers guard.
Yeah, TJ Lang was just cut by the Lions.
Lang, yeah. So those are two guys. I think Sitton's maybe more of a scheme fit. Obviously, Saffold's out there, but he's going to be outside the Vikings' price range. So got to find a bargain. There's rumors that the Vikings are interested in Juwan James from the Dolphins, their right tackle. I don't know about that one, just because of the cap hit. But yeah, if there's options out there, it might be a trade is the best bet.
Oh, trade! So Nick, what do you got cooking up there? What are you thinking in terms of a trade? Like, it's getting thrown around a lot more. Eric's out here talking about maybe even moving a corner. If you were gonna make like a trade or a move, what kind of thing would you be looking at? Which teams would you be targeting in terms of a potential trade or something you'd be looking to get back?
Yeah, trades, I mean, you got to build a win-win. And one of the places where the Vikings have a surplus of talent is at cornerback, which is a premium position. And I think it makes a lot of sense to trade Trey Waynes just because, the marginal cost of going from Trey Waynes on the outside to Mike Hughes on the outside is pretty low. I think Mike Hughes, you saw a lot of the talent there on tape. Not just like the pick six, but the way he clicks and closes, his reaction time, how he jumps routes, how he reads routes, how he's his footwork, stuff like that. I think he was really impressive. So I'm not sure you'd see a big drop off there. You've also got Holton Hill there too. So you've got some good outside corners. So the marginal cost is low and the benefit is, you'd get something big back. And obviously there are teams out there who see Trey Waynes probably as like their CB1, maybe even CB2. So I think you could get a good return. The reason not to trade him is if you just let him walk next year, he probably gets CB1 money and you're getting a compensatory third. But if you could get like a second round back or if you could get a decent offensive lineman back, I think that could be a win-win trade. So I think that makes sense. Rhodes, I think it makes a lot of sense to trade him just because his cap hit is enormous. And, obviously we saw his play drop off a little bit last year from where he was when he was first team All-Pro. I struggle with that a little bit just because Zimmer asks Rhodes to do about as much as like any corner in the NFL. It's like, how many other corners are like, you shadow the corner, the wide receiver one all game, even if he goes into the slot and you have to defend the two-way go. And also we're going to roll the safeties away from you every play. It's like, we're going to run cover three, except Rhodes, you're on cover zero on their wide receiver one, wherever he goes. It's like, it's a lot that they ask of them. And I don't think, Trey Waynes couldn't do that. Trey Waynes can't play the slot. So I think there would be schematic limitations and a lot of the guys that I like for the Vikings, like Anthony Barr, his post-snap play isn't amazing, but the value he brings is like a pre-snap tinkerer and the way he affects the offensive line blocking protections. That's kind of what goes into Zimmer's, Zimmer's now 2 years in a row, first time it's been done, best third down defense in the league. And that's kind of why I think so. I would definitely prefer trading Trey Waynes, and I think that could be a trade where you would find a win-win out there and make it a lot of sense. And there's also been talk about Everson Griffin, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think Waynes does offer a lot of utility to, like, it's an asymmetric utility because, like, the Vikings to him, he's probably on the way out, and but to another team, I don't think he's going to be necessarily as expensive or lack lack the flexibility as Rhodes would. But the issue that's going to come up with Xavier Rhodes is like all those things you said about him are true, but he is an issue with penalties. He's an issue with injuries. We see him like he comes out of games like almost every game, and so there's always like it's always one of those issues where that might be something that you want to spin off on another team who, you know, maybe overvalues all the good things that he brings, which is probably 8/10 of his game, but the 2/10 of his game are things that are annoying and may bleed into the, you know, the other 80% as his contract gets, you know, further down the list and he becomes, I think, year by year a little bit more expensive. So I like his versatility too. I wonder sort of like if he has the, you know, if he'll have the opportunity to maybe play safety down the line. I know that's not really something that, I mean, Trey Wayne's a good tackler, but it's not like in a way that a safety tackles kind of thing. But then Rhodes kind of got that body type where he could possibly slide in. And as we see defenses like 5 years ago, you know, the base defense was still 4-3, but now it's, you know, it's probably going to be Dine more so than anything in like 5 years. So if he could play kind of like a hybrid role, you know, it's just like what kind of flexibility does Zimmer have in the future type thing. I would prefer Wayne's, but of course, like the league thinks less of him. So they might get less in return. It just depends.
Yeah, I think maybe the last point on this is I think if you're selling Rhodes right now, you're selling very low just because he had a big down year after being first team All-Pro. I think if you're selling Wayne's now, you're probably closer to selling high because I think we're seeing about as good as he's going to get just because he has some limitations in how quick he is, how, you know, his hips are a little stiff. That's why he can't track into the slot. So maybe that's the reason to, although, you know, it's not like Rhodes is an appreciating asset at like 29 years old or whatever. So.
God, Rhodes is, man, this team is getting old.
Yeah. Well, and that's the tough part about the Cousins situation is that like it feels, and I don't think we felt it at the time, either time, but it does feel like 2009 to 10 again, right? Where that 2009 defense, you're like, okay, Allen, Ray Edwards, Williams, EJ Henderson, right? Like Chad Greenway, you know, Cedric Griffin, you know, Antoine Winfield, and a couple safeties that we're not great about. But like that defense had a ton of great players. And then all of a sudden you get, okay, Cedric Griffin tears his ACL in the NFC Championship game. That shouldn't be that big of a deal. EJ Henderson breaks his leg, right? Ray Edwards becomes a me first guy. Pat Williams falls off a cliff. Kevin Williams falls slowly down a cliff. And then all of a sudden that 2010 defense is getting Childress fired against Green Bay, right? And it's like, I don't think it's going to be as precipitous with this group, but like also we see Everson, who is a brilliant Viking, probably a Ring of Honor type player. He might be gone. Anthony Barr might leave. You know, Sheldon Richardson was a one-year wonder kind of thing, but he'll probably be gone. Linval Joseph, who knows, right? Like it's really an interesting kind of parallel. And, you know, the thing about Favre, which was so clean, was that they could cut bait, right? Right after, you know, it was sort of always a one-year thing. But with Cousins, it's like if the defense falls off, it's like you're screwed kind of thing. So that's really, I think, the tough part about Cousins is that what happens next year if the Vikings defense is 15th in the league? Like, what's that team going to look like?
And we still can't even get the Clemson quarterback.
Right. And that's the big part about the discussion. So when we talk about, like, I like kind of like trolling people about Cousins more than anything. But, like, my whole shtick is I don't think Cousins stinks. I think the Vikings quarterback situation stinks. And I think those are two different things, right?
Yeah.
And that's, like, I'm not saying that I think that Cousins is a better quarterback than Darnold when I say that – Darnold's a better quarterback than Cousins when I say the Jets have a better quarterback situation. I'm saying that, like, I'd rather have that quarterback situation given all the variables than I would rather the Vikings. And like, that's – I still think that's sound.
Eric, does your Ring of Honor replacement model build in, like, cap space? Is there a way to measure that?
Well, it does. It's not an input, but it's certainly something that we're using. So we do a trade simulator type thing, and right now it's mostly draft picks. But we're sort of moving into the space where we're going to allow players, and so we are going to do, you know, something akin to basically like wins per dollar type thing. But I mean, the key feature in our war model is that different facets of the game are differently important, and so. It should be pretty, if the league is rational, and I think that there are some pockets of irrationality, but if the league's rational, it should be a pretty linear relationship between dollars and, you know, non-rookie year dollars spent and war. But you're going to see some inconsistencies just because, like, when a cornerback has a brilliant year, it's better than when an edge player has a brilliant year.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, do you think Kirk Cousins is like a positive asset given his cap hits?
I think so. He's about a 4-win player, which is pretty good, you know. And I think
More than I would have guessed.
Yeah. So he and the receivers are making up for, I think, below replacement level offensive line play in many situations. So you're sort of like, there's more to eat for them.
That's interesting. So Cousins is like a 4-win player. Khalil Mack's what, like a 1.5-2-win player?
Yeah. Like your intuition is pretty strong there. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I would say Mack
is the lesson of this podcast that Kirk Cousins is underpaid.
It's tough because I don't think that any one of them is I think they're all interconnected to some degree, but I do think that Cousins, I do think you're getting what you're paying for with Cousins. My whole contention was always that it was just never enough. Like the way that the market dictates you have to pay a veteran quarterback is not a winning strategy in the NFL.
Oh, boom. Yeah. I think if you want to spin the hopeful outlook, I've been seeing a lot of talk about like, oh, well, it's an offensive league, it's a passing league, and defense is not sticky, it's not stable. So the only way to win is to have an offensive head coach and a quarterback. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I think the best case scenario, though, is to have a defensive-minded head coach who can make your defense consistently successful. And pair that with an elite quarterback. I think if you're building, you know, your team from your best case scenario, that's where you get Carroll combined with Wilson or Belichick combined with Brady. And I think the Vikings have half of that equation in Mike Zimmer. I think he is probably close to, if not in the same caliber as a defensive play caller as Carroll. I just don't think Kirk Cousins is going to live up to the comparison of Russell Wilson or Tom Brady.
I think the only hole in that is what we saw with Minnesota, which is when an offense does a good job of oozing, you know, squeezing the juice out of the orange, they get hired as head coaches. Whereas if your head coach is already an offensive guy, he's going to be there forever, right? So, continuity there that's inherent in having a guy that's already at the top of the mountain in terms of his profession, I think is the only thing against that, honestly. So the flip of that, I think what you have in LA, which is a brilliant offensive coordinator as the head coach, but also having a defensive coordinator who's content with being a defensive coordinator because they failed a few times as a head coach. Like, if you know, Wade Phillips is I think the exact type of defensive mind you want to have if you're the LA Rams. Maybe Zimmer's next job, for example, if he ever leaves Minnesota, will probably be that role, if you're asking me.
Yeah.
And he'll be brilliant at it.
Yeah. And he'll probably go and win the Super Bowl before the Vikings.
Well, that's a given.
Hey, look, the Vikings are going to get an opportunity to draft Will Greer because he's undervalued to the T. And if he gets in, you know, if the Vikes start out like 10-3, maybe Kirk is ineffective and gets benched or gets hurt. Will Greer pulls a Jeff Hostetler on the Nick Foles. You know, there's always hope.
There is always that. Well, gentlemen, I feel like we've covered everything that there was to cover. And don't want to keep you guys too much later. This was a lot of fun. I feel like folks will enjoy this one. A lot of good points made by two very smart gentlemen. So thank you for coming on and recording with me this evening. I guess, do either of you have anything you'd like to plug? Eric, I know that I got my notification for the forecast, I think, this morning, a new episode drop. Nick, anything coming out from you that we should have listeners be aware of?
At some point, I'm going to have an article on Kirk Cousins' pocket presence. I've been rewatching all the end zone angles of every dropback he's had. Point of the article is same thing that I put out on Twitter, which is, you know, it's It's not good, but it's a lot better than worst in the league, which seems to be the narrative after last year. So basically, it's there are a lot of things you can blame. I'm not sure I would point to his pocket presence as the number one thing. So that'll drop. I don't know. Maybe this week if I get lucky at work.
Okay. Eric, what about you, man?
Yeah, so we have the PFF forecast, which is up on iTunes and Podcast One and all that good stuff. I think I'm joining Matthew Caller tomorrow on 15 on Score North is what it's called now to discuss Vikings free agency. And then I think probably by the time Anthony Barr signs with another team, I'll have an article on sort of his impact on the Vikings and sort of, you know, the interesting ways in which they used him and how effective he was. So. Pretty fun, and you know, we'll have another podcast out, I believe, on Thursday this week, at our normal time.
I love the idea, by the way, of Barr going to like the Patriots, because I can just totally see him being like a Hall of Fame caliber player in Belichick's system, just the way like they use Hightower and Van Noy. It would be insane. So,
yeah, I think Detroit is, you know, I think Detroit also, like, as much as Patricia might be overwhelmed by that job, I think he can. His game plan against the Rams was exactly the one that the Patriots used against the Rams in the Super Bowl. You know, they played him like week 13 or something. And so I think he would be extremely valuable in that role for them too. So just a few, yeah, kind of interesting things to think about.
Well, that's awesome, gentlemen. As I said, thank you, listeners. Thanks for sticking with us here. And yeah, y'all have a good night. Eric, enjoy the second half of the AAF.